You're listening to littlepodcast.com.
I'm Sean the Orange Course, a retro game fan from the U.S.
And I'm Kevin Vink Tambernino, an import gaming fan who took things one step further and moved to Japan.
Together, we make Famicom Dojo, a podcast that explores the Japanese origins of today's video games and consoles.
And speculates about their future, assuming they have one.
It's modern games with a retro twist.
This is the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast.
This week, Vink rediscovers Western RPGs, I've been playing a little bit of The Last of Us, and in future retro we both share addictive games that threaten to derail the entire podcast. Oh, and now we've both seen Star Wars, something Force Awakens, something highest grossing movie in the US of all time, something. Yes, we were born to play all this video games.
Hey Sean, I'm sorry we had to go into reruns last week, but I have a good reason.
You did?
Yes. Yes, I have a good reason. I have a reason that wouldn't be like a good reason for like missing a wedding or something, but a good reason for missing a nerdy podcast, I suppose.
Okay, fair enough.
I had to go into the city to see the new Star Wars movie.
Oh.
And listen, I'll tell you how big of a deal this is. The last movie I saw in theaters was Iron Man 2.
That was
like 5-6 years ago. It's like, to go see a movie in Japan, unless you live in a big city, you know, like I live in a fair sized city, you know, it's bigger than the city you're living in right now, but I'm guessing you have a theater.
Two.
Yeah, exactly. We used to, when I first got here, it was a single screen theater, but it shut down. So I have to either drive and pay tolls, or take a train. And then the cost of the tickets, which are like $20.
Yikes.
Japan, yeah. So, you know, when you see a movie, you're making like a $35 commitment.
Well, that sounds pretty similar to the States, because buying a ticket online costs around $15. And then if you want a large popcorn and a drink, it's another $15.
Oh, I'm not including any food in this calculation. This calculate, although I did eat at Subway. Now, I know that you're like, you ate at Subway. That's like saying, today I breathed air.
Yes.
But Subway is not quite as ubiquitous in Japan. And I had myself a turkey sub, which is also a thing that's hard to get in Japan, turkey.
I imagine.
And so I lived my Western fantasies.
Oh, my. Still can't get a decent pizza, though, I imagine.
You can soak. I make pizza.
And it's okay. That's different.
And it's better than decent. So, okay. but yeah, delivery pizzas. You can get a good pizza in Japan. You definitely can. But you'd have to take out a mortgage on your house to afford it.
Mm.
A large pizza delivered is like, again, like $30.
Good grief.
Yeah, it's not bad pizza, but I mean.
How was Star Wars?
Star Wars! Okay, I came in with pretty low expectations, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
I purposely avoided the buzz, you know, the hype. I didn't even watch any of the trailers.
Oh. Wow.
Again,
so you knew nothing.
I knew nothing. Although, like, from various Facebook posts, I knew that some of the original cast was going to be in it.
Okay. Sure.
And which I would have known from the trailers as well, I'm guessing. I don't know. Still haven't watched the trailers, but
yes, the whole Han Solo saying "Chewie, I'm home" thing has been bouncing around for months.
But anyway, so I went in cold, and I was planning to watch the original trilogy again before going, but I just didn't have time. So I basically just watched the first movie. But really, that's all you need to know,
right? Because it's the same film. Wah. Sorry. I don't mean that. I don't think that's true.
Wow, that was a pretty controversial statement. I'll make a bigger one.
Yes.
It was the same film, but better.
Yes. I agree.
No, but, and I have still yet to see episode 3.
Okay.
I know. I'm a little late. I'm a little late to the game. I'd say that's on my pile of shame, but I don't even have a copy of it. Like, I don't. I liked the original trilogy so much, and I was so disappointed by episode 1. Like,
yeah.
Wow. Like, wow. And then I watched episode 2, like, on VHS that someone gave me. I don't know. But kind of half-heartedly. I thought it was a better movie. But still, I was just like, I think I'm done with Star Wars. And I never even watched 3. But everyone was like, you have to go see this new Star Wars movie. I was not even actually planning to see it.
Oh.
But you know, once I knew that I was gone, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna go into this. And I didn't look up any spoilers, and I'm watching the movie and I'm like, okay, new characters are kind of cool. He was a stormtrooper. And then I'm just like, that's the Millennium Falcon. Did not see that coming.
Really? Oh yeah, you didn't see it. It was in the trailers.
Yes, that's what people told me that. They're like, "Why were you surprised?" I'm like, "I don't know." I also thought that like Han Solo was just going to be a cameo.
No, he was.
He was in it. He was in it to win it.
Right.
Nothing terribly unpredictable happened in the movies.
Right.
In the movie, but the dialogue wasn't Shakespeare, but. Man, did I enjoy it.
Right?
It was a very enjoyable movie. And I am, unlike when I watched episode 1, I am very much looking forward to seeing where this story goes. Although, if it's anything like the first movie, I know where this story goes. Probably Hoth next year.
Right? But, I mean, that's what happens.
No, but it was, next. But it was good. It was good. I really, really liked it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. And go Western mainstream movies.
Right. I've seen it twice.
And you know what it reminds me of?
Hmm.
Mass Effect.
That's high praise? Question mark? I think that's good. That's a good comparison.
Let's wait until I'm saying original trilogy or prequel trilogy.
Wait, what?
But no, like, you know, Mass Effect's also this trilogy.
Yes.
Whatever. With one game made by basically a different company than was responsible for the other ones.
Well, it was published by a different company.
Well, it was published. Okay. We'll go there. We'll go. But, you know, and the first game, which was released with not a huge amount of fanfare.
Sure.
Enough.
Sure.
Enough. Just like Star Wars was. But went on to do, like, exceptionally better than people thought. And... led to a trilogy that had a very controversial third part that some people really, really liked, and other people thought that Teddy Bears with Rocks shouldn't have won that.
Oh, that's really funny, actually. Yeah.
So, okay. Like, I'm finding a lot of comparisons. As I go through it. And it also the comparison that, like, for both of them, I wanted to try to watch the original trilogy before going to see the new movie. But, you know, that's a lot of movie to watch.
Right.
That's maybe like 7 hours of movie. And I was trying to get them done like the night before. And I remember thinking, oh, this is almost like work right now. I should be enjoying this more, you know,
right.
Instead of trying to remember all these things so that references would make sense or something, you know.
Right.
And I felt the same way with, like, the pressure I've been feeling to play the Mass Effect trilogy.
Okay.
And I think in both cases, it's something that I would enjoy if I could get over myself.
Oh, goodness. What does that mean?
I don't know. Like, same with the Star Wars the prequel trilogy. People tell me I'd probably like 3. But at this point it would involve watching 1 and 2 again.
Okay.
To get there.
Am I going to like where this thought ends?
This is an ongoing thought.
Okay.
This is an ongoing thought because I mean for how much I've played of Mass Effect, I'm still on Tatooine and my uncle and aunt are still alive. You know,
we're pretty
early days still. I'm just going around enjoying the blue milk.
Right. Naturally.
Wow, this became a Star Wars podcast. Okay. but I gotta say, like, Western RPGs, this is something that's been happening to me lately.
This episode of the Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is brought to you one final time by Eric Dory. Thank you once again for being such an awesome sponsor. And we hope this episode pleases you, our master.
Okay. Where should we start this? This podcast, everyone, is about Western RPGs or Western-styled RPGs. I'd say you have a lot more experience in these than I do, Sean. So.
Well, I mean, speaking of trilogies, the aforementioned Mass Effect trilogy I have played all of, and finally finished the final DLC for Dragon Age Inquisition, so now I've finished the Dragon Age trilogy, such as it is.
Oh, nice.
And honestly, looking through my pile of shame and otherwise, I think that BioWare RPGs are the only games that I can call RPGs that I actually own and or have played from a Western source.
Oh, wow. There's our other Star Wars connection. They did Knights of the Old Republic.
They did.
I've never played that. Is it good?
It's the same engine. Like basically what I've heard, and someone mentioned this again to me recently, was that Mass Effect is what happened after they lost the Star Wars license and they were going to make another game, and they just retooled it for this outer space opera instead.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense, because as I said, I got a lot of Star Wars vibes from it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, yeah, just in kind of the setup and stuff. Okay. So you've played those, and what other series have you played? So Dragon Age, yeah, you mentioned.
I mean, that's it. Like, you know, I know I don't even know what others might be considered RPGs, honestly.
Well, like Skyrim and
Skyrim. Elder Scrolls. I have not played any of the Elder Scrolls series.
I started one of them once, but I didn't know what I was doing.
I've played MMOs. I've played a little bit of World of Warcraft, but that was after I had been playing City of Heroes for 2 years.
Okay.
So I played it for all of a month and then kept the account for a year and then never went back to it before I canceled it.
Yeah.
That went.
I don't know. The game that I'm playing right now, Xenoblade, I guess plays a lot like an MMO. I get Phantasy Star Online vibes, and that was the first and only MMO I ever played.
But that's a Japanese RPG.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Oh. So is Xenoblade. But I'd say definitely they're more stylistically linked to like the Western ones. But
okay.
I mean, to tell you the truth, if that's the only ones you played, I might actually have a longer history with Western RPGs, but nothing recent.
Okay.
Because I used to play Ultima, and I used to play Wizardry,
Wow.
and I used to play Bard's Tale, and those were all... I quite enjoyed the combat and magic systems and those, but I never liked the perspective.
Okay.
Seeing what's like kind of 3D, but like grid based 3D. You know what I mean?
Sure. Right.
Like you need graph paper to know how to get around or buy a player's map. I think I bought some of the game guides actually back at Walden Books. Is Walden Books still a thing?
No, I want to say they went out of business.
Yeah. Yeah, I would guess.
Because like Barnes and Noble and Borders, and even Borders actually.
Borders is gone. Yeah,
Borders is gone. So
Borders is gone. Yeah.
Thanks, Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Amazon. Why do I care? I don't live in the United States anymore. There's tons of bookshops here.
right. Book off.
Hey. There's no call for that.
Well, it's not as bad as Hard Off.
There's a worse one. There's a worse one in the off. Well, there's Off House, Golf Off.
Wow.
Like Home, but the best one is Liquor Off. It's I'm not
do you,
making.
Do you
this
like
up.
Do you like buy used alcohol or something? Like
I hope so. It could be a vintage, unopened bottle thing, or maybe it's just a liquor store that's in the. I don't know. Whatever it is, you don't tell me to book off in my own house.
Fair enough.
But did you play any of those? You had an Apple II. You must have had some of those type of games.
I know. I played action games.
Really?
Like the closest I could think really is like Wolfenstein, like Castle Wolfenstein. But that's not even – that's still
yeah,
like
that's
an action
still action-y, yeah. But like you didn't have like the original Wasteland or anything?
No.
Or oh man, some of those they were great. And the thing is, I gotta say though, I don't know if I beat any of them.
Okay.
I know I beat some adventure games, like Sierra Adventure Games. And I beat one I know
oh.
called I beat one called Dragon Wars, but it took me years to beat.
Well, okay. If you want to talk about RPGs, like the one that, darn it, do you think that like any of the LucasArts games like Loom would count, or is that not RPG-y enough? Because aren't any stats per se.
I would say they're adventure games.
Yeah, they are adventure
RPGs,
games. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, adventure games. Darn it. Because it's like that and the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade that they did. Like those were the closest to, because they took so long to play. And I mean, you got to remember, like growing up for me, I didn't have my own NES for a good number of years.
Yeah.
So when I did play an RPG, it was like Dragon Warrior or Zelda 2, if you want to go that route with it, even though it's like an action RPG.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, it's like, oh, you know, Willow is a property based off of a Western film. So the game must be a Western game, right? But I'm looking at the developer here. It was actually made by Capcom. So it's also an action RPG, but it is an RPG.
In honor of David Bowie, I've been playing the Labyrinth Famicom game.
Oh, there's a Labyrinth Famicom game? Wait, I knew that.
Really
good. Didn't Juara do a thing about that?
He might have. I didn't see it, but
because he dressed up like the Goblin King and everything.
Yep. Now I'm double sad.
Yeah. Right.
But anyway, it's the game is all in Japanese, so it's kind of a slug to go through. I'm sure someone's put out a translation, but the chiptune versions of the David Bowie songs are the highlight.
Oh, nice.
They're really well put together, and But yeah, it's that one never even got released in the United States, despite being totally off a Western property. But I guess Labyrinth was pretty big in Japan.
Okay.
I can see how it would be. I mean,
you know, Muppets.
Well, not just Muppets, but like David Bowie as Jareth. Jareth.
I think it's Jareth.
Jareth was basically Sephiroth before that was a thing.
Right. Sephiroth is David Bowie. That makes perfect sense.
David Bowie is in every game.
Oh, man.
Oh, who's going to be in every game now?
I don't know. Well, should we back up a little bit and try
Let's back up. Try to
get some definitions going here.
All right.
So I got to say, I never really played a lot of Japanese RPGs.
Really?
Before. Yeah. I mean, I want to say, again, apart from like Zelda 2 or Simon's Quest. And Dragon Warrior was like really the only proper one I had played, and it was interesting enough, but like the grinding and just like how much of the screen was information and not like graphics, yeah. It didn't really appeal to me all that much. And it feels like RPGs at that time, Western or otherwise, were very focused on recreating the pen and paper experience with Dungeons and Dragons. You know, it was just let's automate this.
You mean the Western ones?
Any of them?
I guess. I think
because the whole turn based thing is very much, you know, roll, do your thing. Everyone takes turns. You go in a sequence. That's not an intuitive way to play a video game for someone who's been doing like action games and platformers.
Yeah,
and
whatnot. I can see that.
And it's very slow. And if you're not into that and you don't have a lot of time, then that's not something that would appeal to you.
I think like actually what's interesting is when like Dragon Quest came out, it was actually more of a streamlined way of playing an RPG because the Western ones were even more so. Like,
sure.
Like you had to upgrade different characters' attributes. They were all bit just pages of numbers, whereas Dragon Quest kept it moving.
Right. That's a very good point.
And I think the reason I started liking Japanese role-playing games, I started with the first Dragon Quest. That was my first one. I got it as a freebie with my subscription to Nintendo Power, which was the best offer ever. $15 for a 1-year subscription to Nintendo Power that included Dragon Warrior.
Wow.
Whereas the game itself was selling for $40 at Shopko, you know? So, you know, I'm like, as a kid, I was blown away by that offer. But anyway, played through it, just loved it. Just really, really loved it. And I'm like, this is the genre I'm going to play now. And pretty much after that, it I think it's been my favorite genre since then.
Okay.
And the thing that made me never really finish Western RPGs and kind of avoid them up till now is there actually is a little bit too much freedom at the expense of story. But I think that's changing.
I think BioWare changed that single-handedly.
Maybe. But like in the early ones, you could do anything, but like a lot of it didn't have consequence.
Sure.
Because I mean, you could do anything. Some of the games had consequence, and you could actually create unwinnable situations, which was never good. Like, you killed that guy you need later, but for a lot of them, you know, any game where you make your own character from scratch and how you make your character doesn't really affect anything, usually in those days meant that you weren't going to get a very strong story. It was mainly going to be questing and looting and stuff like that, you know? Whereas a Western RPG, they locked you into a certain number of characters, so you couldn't really play any role you wanted. But because the story moved a little more linearly, you know, you could still, you know, change stats and upgrade and, you know, but at the same time, it was able to keep a solid story going, whereas the budgets and production values were just not high enough on a lot of Western ones that you'd be able to. There's exceptions, of course. What is it? Planescape Torment, a fantastic earlier Western RPG, but in general, they didn't really appeal to me so much because I was more into the storytelling than I was in the like numbers games. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I kind of ignored Western RPGs until you started telling me why they are different these days. So tell me why.
Mass Effect in particular, I don't remember exactly what made me want to get it. I'm sure I saw an ad on TV because I remember seeing them all the time. And, you know, again, this was like the fall of 2007, which is like when Xbox 360 got really good. And for those who don't remember, and we alluded to it earlier, Mass Effect was a Microsoft Studios title when it first came out. So I just lucked out having to happen to have one, and I was able to play this game. Science fiction is my bag. So I was aware of Knights of the Old Republic, of course, having watched some friends play it in college. So I was a little familiar with the dialogue system, at least. It's very, very similar.
I thought that was new for Mass Effect.
It's better for Mass Effect.
Okay.
So, but, you know, again, I don't think I've seen Knights of the Old Republic in like 13 years. So my memories of it are very fuzzy at best.
Okay.
Just kind of like going back a bit to what I liked about the JRPGs that weren't JRPGs, like Zelda or like Simon's Quest, that had RPG-ish elements to it, but was still were very action-y.
Okay.
Mass Effect fits that. It's an over-the-shoulder shooter. So that's like where most of like the action from the gameplay comes. But then you have the quiet moments where you're talking to crew or hanging out at a space station or whatever.
Yeah.
That I really enjoy the strong character development and stories and threads, and then the very strong emphasis on making decisions that in some places they deliberately put you in a tough spot. And that does have repercussions for the game you are playing and for future titles. Maybe not as great as one might have hoped when the game first came out, but they're there. And if you like story-based entertainment of any kind, you know, not just video games, but like, you know, TV shows and film, then you will like Mass Effect. And it was just like the perfect storm for me of all those things I liked about RPGs, without being turn-based, without, because you know, a lot of JRPGs, even when I like them, the story gets a little ridiculous.
It definitely can, yeah.
like Final Fantasy VIII, I'm just that whole head fake kind of put me off to the whole thing. I didn't finish it afterwards. I'm like, this is dumb. This is ridiculous. I don't want to keep going. Like, I was having a hard time with how similar it was to 7 in the first place.
Okay.
I even called Squall Cloud because of how similar they were.
I see.
But
well, they were in their brooding protagonist phase.
Yes, yes. I liked the freedom and how kind of segmented like mission based it is, because again that kind of harkens back to the MMOs I had been playing.
Okay.
So it's very quantized and chunked, and it's easy to like kind of go in, I'll do a few missions today and be done. And then, you know, I have literally a list of things I get to do next. It keeps track of how I want to play the game that way. And I like those things. So, I mean, given that I haven't played really anything contemporary outside of the BioWare family of games, I can't really say how that compares. Although I've,
yep.
Who makes The Witcher? Is that even an RPG or is that an action game?
It's like it's a studio. Oh gosh, it's a Polish studio. They're
okay.
They're the ones who own good old games. What is it? Something CD Projekt or something, or
sure.
Something. I have Witcher 1 and 2 in my Steam pile of shame,
Okay. Or
my good old games pile of shame.
Sure.
And I'd really like to get to those, but like. Not right now.
Sure.
I think I'd like them though. From what I've seen, they look really good.
I guess the thing you would call a Western RPG, as much of an adventure game as it can kind of marry to that whole idea, really kind of turns my crank for that kind of thing, because I love adventure games.
Okay.
And so between the action, the adventure aspects, and then making the RPG elements not too crazy. Because you still have stats for your characters, you can still have like skill trees,
yeah.
and but they've taken out a few of the things that I found annoying about Japanese RPGs, such as it depends on the game, of course, but like having to level up characters individually and pulling them out of your party just to level up someone else, and the grinding, the endless grinding, like none of that happens in Mass Effect. Like everyone levels up together, whether you play them or not, and then if you do pull them into your party, you can build up their stats at whatever level everyone ends up being at, and that's true across all the BioWare games.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
That's very nice. So if you do want to switch someone out, you don't have to worry about them being underpowered and useless later on.
Well, that's a nice thing to know. Yeah.
If you feel like you screwed up someone's build, you can do someone else a little bit differently. Although I don't remember for sure. I think there's a way to reroll. Maybe there isn't. I don't remember honestly. But like generally, like once you commit to a change in stats, it's permanent.
Okay. Here, I got a question for
sure.
You. Am I going to have to commit to this face I made for all three games?
No.
Okay, because like I remember I told you I played Mass Effect 3 before 1. And their like character creation system was way more robust.
Oh, yes, definitely.
But the first game, I'm like which of these derpy presets do I want? or okay, I want to make a character that looks like me. Okay, characters can't have glasses. Characters can only have buzz cuts, apparently.
Oh.
You know, I can adjust the chin to look either classic space marine or look dumb. I'm just like, oh, whatever. I'm just going to use a preset. So.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you're still on Eden Prime, then it might be worth starting over if you're that upset about it, because you're going to be with this guy for a while.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just letting him be John Shepard. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And that's fine. You know, I was trying to get one that looked like the guy on the cover of the game, but none of the presets looked like that.
Really? Oh, okay. So if you don't do a custom character, that's when you get that face.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. But if I don't do a custom character, I can't choose my backstory.
Right.
That was the thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry about that. I didn't realize because I made mine custom right away. Didn't even think about the guy in the box.
But that's okay. Anyway, I'll be fine. I'll be fine with him. He seems a nice bloke in that whole uncanny valley sort of way.
Well, if you make it all the way through to 2, you do have the opportunity to change it at that point. Although I don't remember if you're able to fully customize or if it's just like you get this chance to import the old face.
Well,
I don't remember exactly.
Either way, I don't care so much. Okay. You know, do you want to go down this track anymore? Or is the anticipation killing you to hear what I have to say about Mass Effect?
We can keep this going a little bit more. I'll wait. I've been waiting long enough.
Years. Literally years.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, aren't you curious? I'm not going to tell you why, but aren't you curious, like, why you're able to change your face after, you know, I explain how story-based this thing is and such a thing would be noticeable to people? Just think about that. Let that percolate through your mind, grapes.
Not so curious, because I'm sure they'll find a way to do it, because the technology has improved a lot between games. It's obvious. I mean,
sure.
To tell you the truth, the first game is a bit clunky, you know?
Yeah, it's true. Oh, yeah, I think I mentioned to you early on in the game you should probably save often, because the autosave feature is not as robust as in later games. I know Zach Shipley, friend of the show, tried to play Mass Effect recently and just gave up after he spent an hour and a half kind of running around one of the early environments and then gets ambushed, killed, and then it starts him back.
And save is like hidden within like 2 layers of menu too. It's really...
Oh, yeah. I don't think that ever really goes away. No, I take it back. They do make it more prominent in later games.
But I'll say, like, I play again, I played Mass Effect 3 first, and I thought the movement and things were a lot better in that, you
Oh
know.
yeah. Mass Effect 3 actually is even a big improvement over 2. Like 1 and 2 have more in common, although it looks prettier, but like yeah, the movement in 3 is really really awesome.
So, Western RPGs.
Yes.
So we've got now. What's interesting right now is how much that the Japanese RPGs are trying to be like Western RPGs.
Right.
I think,
Yes.
have you played Final Fantasy 12?
I have not played a Final Fantasy since 10.
Okay.
At least not a newer one. I think I went back to 5.
Yeah. Okay. The battle system is more like, you know, action going on, very kind of MMOE, you know.
Sure.
And of course, the game that I'm obsessed with, Xenoblade Chronicles, is it's in the middle. It really is. I think the aesthetic is still looking very Japanese. And there's definitely a lot of the tropes. You know, you've got your sidekick alien character, you know, stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of, but it's trying to be open world, and when you're talking about, I'm just going to pick up a couple of missions and go out and do them. I'm like, that's how I'm playing Xenoblade, you know. Xenoblade. I'm talking about Chronicles X, by the way. Although Xenoblade, the first Xenoblade also was, you know, but Xenoblade Chronicles X is almost like an MMO that's offline.
Just like Dragon Age, at least the first one.
Although there are online parts, squad things, and I don't know, maybe something like a raid. I don't know. I haven't gone into it because I'm trying to go through the story first. But I'm loving that one, and maybe it's what made me feel that I could give Mass Effect another try. In that people make comparisons between the two. So, and yeah, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it. The dialogue tree system in Xenoblade is a lot less robust. There's usually only two choices you can make.
Okay.
But you know, it's that type of thing, and there's a lot of missions, and you know, things broken up with bits o story. You should play Xenoblade Chronicles
Yeah,
X.
I know, but
No, like,
how?
you put the disc in the drive. You should download the extra files, the texture files. They'll speed things up a lot if you have those downloaded.
Wait, what?
Well, like the game itself is, it takes up pretty much the entire capacity of the disc,
Okay.
the Blu-ray. It's a huge game. And Nintendo games don't install usually, you know,
Right.
because it needs to be able to be played for those who even have the, like, you know, 8 gig system, and it is playable.
Right.
But you
Okay.
can go online, and there's free DLC that installs a lot of the textures and, you know, world maps. And, you know, there's these different packs you can download, which will speed up loading times and how fast things, you know, pop in, I guess.
Right, okay.
It's apparently a very noticeable difference. I don't know, 'cause I had them installed before I bought the game even. So, I haven't seen it without them, but the game is beautiful. The game is beautiful. But anyway, that's how you play it. So, you should do that.
Okay. All right.
I think by how you describe the things you like about Mass Effect, I think you would like Xenoblade.
Oh, okay.
Like,
Okay.
I think you'd really like it. And there's herb gathering.
No,
So
why?
you'd No, I'm going around and they're not herbs, but you know, there's all these things that I'm gathering, the, like, I guess some of them are herbs, but I mean, you know, I'm just going around and I'm like, oh, if I can get 10 of these, then I can. And I'm like, oh no, I've become one of them.
Yes, one of us. You know, I've moved on to The Last of Us, which I haven't played enough of to really talk about yet. But there's a part where you collect pills, basically, yep. And it helps improve your. There are RPG-ish elements to this too, but it's really more an action game. But you're able to improve your health stats with these pills you can gather, and one of the things that counts towards a pill count is a potted plant. So.
Yep. our listener Satoshi Matrix sent me, occasionally when he's playing games, will send me a screen cap whenever he finds a game where he can gather an herb in. He'll just he sent me one of Hyperdimension Neptunia.
Oh, nice.
Gathering an herb in there, and I'm like, I'm glad that people think of us when they gather herbs. I'm glad that's a thing.
Yep, it's our thing. We own it now.
Yes. Yes. Anyway.
You hear that, lawyers? It's ours.
It's ours.
I think that's how that works, right? You're like on
anybody,
notice.
Like anybody wants that. Someone's listening right now and going, I'm going to make a podcast and it's going to have twice as many herbs.
Well.
Well, I suppose there are ones. Anyway. So, Western RPGs, and I gotta say that, like, the RPG that people knew as, like, just the standard, like, turn-based, very linear Japanese RPG, it's kind of going away, isn't it?
It is, and I...
Like, I'm trying to think of an upcoming one that's, like, I mean, there's definitely some for handhelds. I think that's where it's continuing on. Mm. And maybe mobile devices are getting a little more kind of throwback ones. Mm.
Mm.
But, like, a big budget, you know, large company console release of RPGs, I'm trying to think because, you know, Final Fantasy 15 is going to be more action-based.
Okay.
You know, and sure. I think it'll be linear in story, but you know, it's not gonna be your traditional I go, you go, you know, type of game. And to tell you the truth, that kind of makes me sad because I like games like that. If it's done well. Have you ever played Grandia 2?
Yes, and Grandia 2 was such a breath of fresh air, especially after I had played Final Fantasy 7.
Yeah.
And I love that whole active system, and then like the part where if you defeat an enemy, then you will attack the next one nearby if you still have some attack left in your in your moves. And so, oh, so good. So when I found a copy of the first Grandia for PlayStation, I believe I bought it for. I was a little disappointed.
If it's the English version, you played it on PlayStation.
Yes. Well, I have a Japanese version for Sega Saturn well, but I don't. Saturn, right?
Yeah.
Pretty sure. Yeah. It's all in Japanese, so I never really played it.
The game was meant to be Saturn's like answer to Final Fantasy VII, but it never really took off like that.
Okay.
But it led to Grandia 2. And you know, I never played Grandia 3. Listeners, is it worth playing Grandia 3? Because I loved Grandia 2. Like, the story wasn't anything you know, it was a good story, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the epic, you know, end all story. But like, that was one that I didn't mind grinding because the battles were just so fun.
Exactly. So I would literally like And like Zelda 2, for instance, you're able to force encounters by like running into enemies on the screen. So I would literally do that. I would like clear out an area like that because fighting wasn't tedious.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things I think a lot of the newer games are really trying to make, you know, the battles something that. I think the whole reward system, like with Western RPGs, there's so many little bars to fill up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're collecting all these things. You're looting. You're building up stats. I think in a lot of Western RPGs, you spend more time in your like menu screens than you do actually playing the game.
Mm.
You know, just upgrading these things or crafting or you know, just that little stuff. And I think that appeals to a certain segment of people, and I like it to a certain extent myself. But yeah, the RPG as we knew for JRPG, I don't know if that really exists anymore. I haven't really been looking into the new Star Ocean. That one might be a little more traditional. But like, you know, Final Fantasy is going its own way. A lot of speculation is that Final Fantasy VII is going to be a very different beast.
Oh, yeah, I'm okay with that. Yeah, they've been saying over and over again, this is not just like an upscaled version of the game. It's a different game.
But we'll see, because some people are worried that it's not really even going to be an RPG at all. That it's
that's fine too.
I mean, that it's going to be, you know, basically an action game.
Okay, I'm okay with that.
With light RPG elements, I might be okay with it. It depends how it goes. You know what I mean? Because one of the best things about an RPG is if you're terrible at video games, you can just grind until you're better.
Right. I mean, that's the thing.
Like, if you have a pure action game, you know, if you're weak sauce, you can continue to practice a long time, but with no guaranteed result.
Right.
But with a JRPG, you know, as long as you have the time, which is, you know, not always available, you know, you can probably beat the game eventually.
Mm.
I don't know about Western RPGs. Maybe not.
Well, again, playing The Last of Us, I'm getting the impression, because all these upgrade things seem optional. Yeah. I'm guessing that at low difficulties, you can play through this whole game and never upgrade your weapons or your health or whatever. But if you want to play at the higher difficulty levels, it's probably a requirement.
Yeah.
But the game never explicitly forces you to do.
Okay.
Either way, I'm guessing. So that's kind of the tack that Mass Effect and Dragon Age take, where like in Mass Effect's case, you can stack abilities from your squad to counter an opponent's shielding or other stats like that. So it becomes very RPG-y in that way. But if you don't care for that kind of thing, then you can just shoot stuff until they're dead, for instance. Or like Dragon Age, very, very similar, where you use a lot of debuffs and a lot of MMO tactics, but it's just a single player game.
Okay.
Do you like movies? Well, you better, because we're going to talk about your favorite one for 10 minutes.
This isn't a movie. This is a f***ing documentary. This was my high school experience, except I did not get my period. But I'm still hopeful. And if it happens in the next 9 minutes and 52 seconds, I'll tell you.
This is 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie.
Listen to 10 Minutes About Your Favorite Movie every Monday on the Little Podcast Network.
All right. So you want to hear what I think about Mass Effect?
Please let me... Tell me, please.
Okay. We're in early days here. Mm-hmm. On the clock when I finished, I think I was 2.5 hours in.
And you're still on Eden Prime. You're really soaking it in.
I am not an Eden Prime. I am Citadel right now.
You're in Citadel. Okay.
But I've actually been playing the game for about 4 hours if you count installing it.
I thought you were going to say character creation, because that...
No, I went through character creation pretty quick because I wanted to get to some meat of the game before our podcast.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, and this is strange because, as I told you, I tried to play the Japanese version of it on my Xbox 360, which I bought, and it just started the game right away. So I didn't have to install anything. So I don't know what.
Oh yeah, the 360. Yeah, I didn't install anything on my 360 either.
I guess it's because when that game was made, not all 360s had hard drives, so they had to make it. They had to make it that it wouldn't need an install. But I didn't even have the option of not installing it on the PlayStation 3. So
okay,
and it took a long time. I don't even know why it took so long. Well, it also I had to update. I had to update my PlayStation 3, and then I had to update the storefront, and then I had to, because I wanted to see if I needed to get any DLC for the first game, because there were some codes in the box or something. Eventually I just didn't bother, but okay. Is there any DLC I should get for the first game?
I
think some of it's included. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a thing. I think all the first game's DLC is included, and then you have codes for the second game. I think that's how that works.
Okay. I don't know.
And the only one of substance, I think, is Bring Down the Sky, which when installed is just another mission on the map, I think.
Okay. It's just I don't care at all about cosmetic things or even other weapons and stuff, but I don't want to think I'm missing some of the story.
No, I don't think there's really any story-based DLC that you have to worry about for the first game. Okay. The second one, definitely, because entire companions, entire squad members are DLC characters. Yep.
Well, let me start with the story. I was very confused in my first half hour because there was a lot of story being thrown at me very quickly,
mm-hmm.
with not a great deal of explanation. But I think that was intentional. Because it looks like you're going to piece it together just from talking to people.
Mm-hmm, yep.
But, you know, there were a lot of races and terms and things just thrown around that I, you know, I'm like, was I supposed to read something before I went into this? But
eventually you will find out why an Elcor performing Hamlet is funny.
Okay.
I promise.
Anyway, so I'm walking around the ship. I would say that I enjoy how well produced the voice acting is.
Mm.
I really like that you have a lot of options on the dialogue trees. Although I sent you a text that I said, does anyone start saying anything from what I can remember in my school books or something, you know?
Yeah, what was that a reference to? I don't remember.
I keep asking people, like, because you have the Inquirer, and I'm like, tell me what you know about blah, blah, blah. And they're like, well, I only know what I've been told in school or something like that.
Oh,
you know?
Okay, like, now it's coming back to me.
It seems like every character says the same thing.
Right, like, are you an idiot? Don't you remember this stuff?
Yeah, whatever. But it didn't seem to have enough variation in it for me because everyone was like, oh, I only know what I've been told or what I've learned in school or, you know, but... Sure. But I mean, I guess what else are you going to do there? Because you're supposed to have been living this life for years. Like, I think that's a difference with Xenoblade Chronicles X is that, and this is not a spoiler because it happens at the beginning of the game.
Sure.
You come out of like cryostasis and you have lost your memory.
Okay.
So it's understandable that the characters are explaining everything to you. But Shepard's supposed to be, you know, he's up for Spectre, you know what I mean?
Right,
you know?
Right, yeah. He's an N7 badass.
He shouldn't be going like, how does a spaceship work? You
know? Are there bathrooms on this thing?
Yeah, exactly.
How do you love?
What's the captain's name?
You know? Right.
You know. Anyway.
The codex will become your friend, especially now that you're on the Citadel and you're able to gather more information. When you encounter certain things for the first time, you will unlock something you can read. And if you're not really great on the reading thing, then the more important entries will be narrated by voice. But if you want to get into nitty gritty detail, you're going to have to do a lot of reading
if it's interesting to you. I'm fine with the reading stuff. I don't have a problem with that. Although I am playing it on like a 14-inch CRT, so it's actually pretty hard to read it.
On my 27-inch CRT, I had a hard time reading the dialogue options sometimes. But that was on a 360, so
they make the game available in that resolution, and they do some things to. But it's hard. It's like an early Apple II word processor. You know, you're
Oh jeez.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get real up in there. And yeah, a lot of people on my. Oh, by the way, I was posting on Twitter my comments about the installation process of the game, and I lost about 20 Twitter followers.
Really?
Yes. I think people didn't want me making fun of Mass Effect, but I was just shedding people.
Oh,
so
no.
if any of you were my former Twitter follower, I'll just let you know that I'm not going to do that anymore. But I was just like, I had the if anyone's on my Twitter, it's at Famicom Vink. But there's this a sequence of about 10, just the progress bar loading up and me saying things like, experience the deep lore. Some of the comments I was getting back were right. That's the Mass Effect experience. And I'm like, did this win Game of the Year because it took a year to install and they couldn't play anything else?
I mean, so now to be fair, you, for those who don't know, you're playing Trilogy, and Trilogy was, I think, the only way that this first game was even available on PS3.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yes. There was no standalone, for the first game. And I don't, it's interesting because it's three separate discs, and I'm guessing 2 and 3 are just exactly the versions that were released on the PlayStation 3, because I don't think they have the DLC built in, because you have those codes you have to actually download. So I think they're just the same exact disc, and then they made a version for, and it's not an enhanced port, I gotta say, because I think it looked better on the 360.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've heard people who've compared the two say that. But Mass Effect 2 was built for both at the same time.
Yes, yes. But man, Uncanny Valley is strong in Mass Effect 1.
Yeah.
Like, I know, and it's a problem in Xenoblade 2, the faces especially, but like, it feels like when they open their mouth leads to an infinite space. Do you know what I mean? It's like a star field in the background. Like, it doesn't look right. It just...
I don't remember
then
that
again,
being...
Then again, I am playing it on a CRT, so who knows? That might be... That might be part of it. But
so what you're saying is they're bigger on the inside.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Oh man! Unless that's a plot point that's going to happen later.
I will say nothing.
but anyway, yeah. Again, sorry, Twitter followers. I'll stop making fun of Mass Effect. But I was having fun because I really wanted to play it, and I'm like, it's 10 o'clock. I'm gonna play this game, and then I had other stuff to do, and I finally got around to it, and I'm like. And finally, it finished installing, and I got to the title sequence, and it was 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, well, time for bed! I like the atmosphere. I like the story. I like the world it's creating. I liked that first alien guy I met. He didn't last long. Sorry, spoilers.
Yeah.
He seemed cool. I don't know. But and there's definitely a lot going on, and there's where I can compare it to Star Wars again, because it's giving hints at something that's clearly a bigger thing than the one form of media can hold,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, Star Wars talks about an incident that happened, and someone's written a novel about it, but you won't see it in the movie.
Right.
You know?
In Mass Effect, that novel exists in the game,
more or less. Yeah, it seems from all the writings and stuff. But so I like the story enough that it makes me want to continue playing the game, which is, I think, the what you were hoping I would say.
Yes. But...
I really don't like the shooting parts.
Oh, no.
I really wish I could somehow skip them. You know what I mean?
Well, that's... I think Mass Effect 2 lets... Well, I don't know how that works. Because I played Mass Effect 2 on insane mode. So.
And I think maybe I just got to get used to it. Because I... The only third-person shooter that I feel that I am capable at is Splatoon. And this is not Splatoon. You know what I mean?
Right.
I feel like it's either imprecise or it's too precise. I mean, like, either way, I feel like I'm shooting a lot of bullets and hitting very few things.
Sure.
It's a cover-based system, which I'm not really used to so much. So, I have to get used to that, but I wish it was more of an RPG and less of a shooter.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, I think that if it was, it would be a fantastic game for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's where I'm enjoying Xenoblade more, because it's more of an RPG. Again, not far enough into Mass Effect to totally make the connections, but like when I was playing Xenoblade, it gripped me like within the first half hour.
Okay.
And and I'm 30 some hours into it now, and it's hard to pull myself away from that to play Mass Effect.
Fair enough.
But the thing is, I think probably the story in Mass Effect is going to turn out to be better. I think it's going to be a better story because Xenoblade is more of, as I said, it's MMO-like. So there's a plot that's going on, but it's not the main focus. The main focus is, you know, exploration and stuff like that. Oh, also, this is one where I wish the trilogy came out on the Wii. Because one of the best things about Xenoblade is my map on the lower screen.
Oh, sure.
And not having to constantly shift back and forth. Because as I told you, when I play third-person games, I get lost really easy.
Yep, yep.
I was wandering around on Eden Prime forever, trying to figure out how I got out of there.
Oh, because, sure.
Because the map is not very helpful. It's like, go this way. And I'm like, rocks there. You know? And so you have to go out to the big map to see how to actually get around things. And,
sure.
And it's not intuitive. Like, if there was one button that would instantly flash it on the screen, that would be great. But you got to go through menus.
Right.
And I also think that using the analog stick to choose things works very well for the dialogue stuff, but not so much for menu options. I'd rather just have a list. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe once I get used to it.
Yeah, even though I believe that this dialogue system is an improvement over KOTOR without any of the backup evidence, because I can't remember how that worked, they do improve that in subsequent Mass Effect games as well. It becomes a lot more obvious which things are sort of just... Yeah. Asking questions about the topic without changing the topic or continuing the conversation to the next point.
All right.
And right now it's a little less clear.
I got two questions.
Sure.
Because, and these are going to sound stupid questions, but I actually had to look one of these up online. I've already answered it, but can you jump?
Oh, no.
You cannot jump, right?
No, you can't.
But the thing is, there were all these like rock formations that looked like steps almost.
Oh.
And they're like, they are ankle high, but I cannot go over them. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, what? I'm like, this is the barrier. And on another one, they had like debris that was kind of in a line keeping me from going from there. And I'm like, really? I don't know. It took me out of the moment. Maybe that's, but that's from playing Xenoblade too much, because you can go anywhere in that game.
Yeah. Same with Dragon Age, where you can jump constantly, and then I switched to playing Last of Us, where you can only jump in context-sensitive situations, and I'm just like, this is unbearable. Okay. Also, the L3 button you would use to scan for nearby things you can interact with. And in Last of Us, at least, I don't know if it's like this in the PS3 version, but that's your camera mode.
Okay.
So I've had these problems where I've been like in the middle of a intense action scene and I'll push it on accident and then.
Can you run?
Yes. Wait.
Like a fast run, like more than the extent of moving the analog stick all the way to one direction.
Yeah. There's
What do I hold down?
X. I don't remember. There's a button you do hold down. Oh, it's the A button, I think. You hold on A, and you can run a bit faster. And then like the focus kind of narrows.
Yep.
Like the aperture kind of narrows.
Okay. Because when I do get lost in the game, which happens a lot, and I finally go to the map to figure it out, then I'm like, casual stroll, right? Alien homeworld. Also, when I'm trying to pick up like an item, like I find an item pack. In a normal game, you just walk over it and you get it.
Yeah,
you
have to push a button.
You've got to like open it. But I've got two people trailing me, and I'm like, okay, trying to open a treasure chest, and they're like, all I smell is war and death. And I'm like, shut up! I'm just trying to open a treasure chest. And I'm like, get out of the way! And I go over it again, and then it's the same line again, and I'm like, ugh.
It's atmospheric.
Yeah, but the thing that's another thing though. Like, I don't know. I kind of like when they talk when you're like moving into a new area.
Sure.
But I don't want to talk to them the rest of the time. Like when there's a battle going on and I accidentally talk to someone.
I'm
this is not what I wanted to do.
No.
And then one of them had the nerve to go, "We're in a battle now. Don't talk to me." And I'm like, "I am not trying to talk to you. I'm trying to shoot that thing behind you, which you should be shooting at, not talking to me." You know?
Yeah, they fix that later. I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot how kind of weird and janky this game is because I love the story so much.
Well, that's the thing, though. I really like the story, but like I felt like the Eden Prime stuff was something I was trying to get through to see what happened next. You know?
Okay.
That part about it wasn't enjoyable for me just because of the types of games I like to play. However, this game is actually interesting enough with the atmosphere and the story that I'm going to try to figure it out. You know, I'm going to try to deal with third person combat. But like, does it ever get really hard? Because I'm very bad at playing this game.
Well, I mean, if it does get really hard and you don't like the combat, then I would recommend turning down the difficulty, which you can do at any time.
Oh, I already did.
Oh no.
I mean, I've only died once, and that was just because I didn't really know where people were shooting at me from. But
sure.
But yeah.
There are areas where that gets a bit more difficult. When you get further out into the galaxy and you land on planets that have all the same kind of habitat modules all over the place.
Can I grind to make up for my lack of ability?
Not exactly. Like there's an effective level cap.
Okay.
Not a practical one, because if you do it like a new game plus, then you can start where you left off.
Okay.
But I think like 25-ish is about the most you can hope to max out as. Because there's not like enemies that spawn. Like you finish a mission, it's over.
Okay.
You can't go back and farm.
I see. All right. Well, I'll figure this guy out.
I wouldn't worry that much, because I think the curve isn't too bad.
Okay.
And I mean, you're in the Citadel now, so that's where a lot of the learning happens.
I mainly just want I would very much like to experience the story, I think would be pretty cool. So I chose to go Man Shep. Mm-hmm. Shemp.
Shemp.
Yeah, I chose
fake Shemp personally.
I'm playing that new Three Stooges MMO. It's very violent. Isn't it?
Well, I mean, yeah.
It's very poking accurate. People in the eyes. It's pretty good. Oh dear. Anyway, so that's my thoughts. I'm gonna continue playing it. To tell you the truth, I think the type of game for me at this time in my life is probably more of the Xenoblade style, but that's eventually going to run out, and it looks like Mass Effect's making a lot more. So,
yes.
But for you, I would really recommend trying Xenoblade, because I think you'd really like it.
Oh gosh, my piles and piles of shame, though. I feel bad. I got to get back to Lego Dimensions still.
Well, sell your other shame and get this. But no, I really think you did you ever play any Phantasy Star Online?
No.
Okay, because I mean it's kind of that aesthetic, but the battle's quite different. But it's good. It's a good game. Look at me playing new games. Yes, we were born to play on this retro game. Let's act on you, Ina, Famicom, Cartoon, Ogre. Thank you for this video game. We should talk some retro stuff. What do you think?
Sure. So that means we're going on to our future retro?
Yep.
All right.
Future Retro is a segment where we talk about contemporary video games that have the potential to be remembered as classics.
Or classics that we've played for the first time, or just more recently.
And in Pile of Shame, we talk about the games we haven't been playing, and try to convince each other if we should.
Or not.
Well, all this talk of RPGs reminded me that a while ago, I put this on my Future Retro list and never went back to it. And I feel really bad about that. So I would like to talk about Game Dev Story.
Oh, no, don't talk about Game Dev Story.
Oh, no, why?
Every time we talk about Game Dev Story, I start playing it again.
Oh, no.
And Game Dev Story is like, what would it be? Let's see. Like heroin, if heroin was really addictive.
Yikes.
No, every time we've talked about Game Dev Story on this podcast, I go, I should play some Game Dev Story again. 3 days later, I come out of my Game Dev Story like, productivity goes down. It's so good.
Oh, boy.
Okay, okay. Tell me about Game Dev Story, but don't make it sound too good.
Well, what actually caused me to play it was another podcast called Games Seriously, the Games Seriously podcast, I guess. Okay. And its third episode called Deep Dive. Unfortunately, since I listened to that podcast, not many more episodes were made, and the last episode aired in May of 2015. So I'd love to recommend a new podcast for everyone, but I mean, I guess you can listen to it, but there's not a lot there. I don't know. There was like a bunch of college students, I think, so they must have graduated or something happened.
That's what happens when people have real responsibility. Right. Don't worry, guys. This one's going to keep going.
Oh, no. So I went and played this again because it was, you know, it was on my phone. It was on the device I was listening to the freaking podcast with, too. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I fired it up and played through it once. And like, yeah, it is really, really addictive. And it's got that problem of like, you know, just one more. Just one more fiscal year, you know. Just one more game. And yeah,
play is really, the turns are really quick, and there's that. You see the resources like visually transferring to your games, which just has some psychological satisfying thing.
Right, right, and it's like if you didn't quite get the numbers you wanted on your sales, it's like, I know what I can do better next time, and then you're just like, this would be quick. It's never quick.
And then it's 4 a.m.
Right? It's 20 years later.
never play Game Dev Story if your phone is charging. Right. Because you will never stop.
Right.
The only way you stop playing this game is when your battery dies.
Right. So I spent a lot of that first game kind of trying to remember the mechanics of how to get things to work well, you know, how much advertising helps you or doesn't in what situations. And again, you know, just like year after year going to those game shows and seeing what numbers I was getting. And so it wasn't like towards the end, because this game goes like on a 20-year cycle, and then you can keep going, but you don't. It doesn't really matter at that point. I felt like it wasn't toward the end of that I finally got a hang of what I was supposed to do. So, of course, I played it again right away.
Yeah, of course.
And this time, and so this is my third playthrough overall. Yep. And this time, I was very curious to try and do my own console for a change.
Ah, yes.
Which ended up being a pretty good deal. But it ended up... I had to understand a bit better how the whole job system worked, and that you need to know how to promote people and build up their skills and
get
them through the right different areas so that they had enough. Because I had to actually look up a guide for this.
Oh, really?
Because it wasn't really – I didn't want to have to spend two or three more playthroughs to figure it out.
Yeah.
Because if you don't know what you're doing right away, then you're gonna not really reap the benefit of this kind of approach. But you know, you need.
So you looked up what the like advancement cycle was.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, okay. So I was
evolution,
able to like,
evolution basically. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was able to like build my, or use my own chip, build my own console. And once you get to that point, it doesn't even make sense to develop for another console after that.
No, not at all.
So this is something you want to do in your second playthrough at the earliest, I would think, just so you get a feel of what the game is like. But I really did enjoy that, but it kind of did make the game too easy because I've made just mad sick money after a while. And but it was still satisfying somehow. And I think I might be done with the game now. I think I might be done. But for those who don't know, you start with like a 4-person studio.
Yep.
The fifth being your receptionist. There's like a wandering salesman who comes by every once in a while to sell you like boosts. And you just for the different kind of categories like creativity and gameplay and graphics and music, you just have to buy. Yep. The ability to do a boost once, and then you spend your floppy disks, whatever those are called, whatever points, to actually use the boost thereafter. So like, you know, knowing when to do that and how it helps your stats and your view scores based on those stats is very helpful. And then after a while you make a lot of money, you're able to move into a bigger space, hire more people. And that's where I kind of fell down the first time. Was it's like, what's the point of having more people other than like getting your development cycle faster? But the point is, if you want to build your own hardware, that you
need
those people to go through those different jobs, and you can't just hang on to them. And at a certain point, some people just won't level up anymore, and you got to fire them and hire someone who's more expensive and better, which is just like real life.
You know, there's a sequel to that, right?
No, don't tell me that.
I don't think it was ever localized, though.
Oh, God. Thank God.
However, I was jonesing for more game dev stories so much that I downloaded one called GP Story, like Grand Prix. It's like auto racing. It's like game dev story with auto racing. And I don't care at all about auto racing or cars or anything like that. But I must have sunk in 30 hours into this.
Nice.
And they have – the other ones are more SimCity-esque. Like their management things are like manage a hot spring or manage an amusement park or something. And those are good, but I think the one – game dev story had the more addictive quality because you – I don't know. It seemed like every action you took was much more direct.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a good game.
Yeah. So the original was a mobile phone game, like a pre-iOS game, right?
It might have been a PC game first, but but it was available on like, Japanese like feature phones, I guess you'd say, like not like from 97, I think, you know.
Because I seem to remember in the first iterations of this when I originally bought it, that there were some like built-in phone controls.
Yeah.
In the UI,
it did. It basically it had like. Side button things, you know, so that you could control it without touch, you know. Yeah,
and those are gone now, and I think that there are references because there's like knockoff like cheeky parody names of existing consoles. I think they've added newer consoles since I first bought it too.
They have done updates, so yeah. Okay. Oh no. Because now I don't know how new you're saying, so now I might have to. No, I'm not gonna play it again. I can't. I just. Oh man.
Yeah, they have fun company names like Intrendo, Sunny.
Yep.
I forget what else, but
my favorite part was just coming up with names of the games. You're like, okay, right? I've got a bikini sumo strategy RPG. What should I call this?
My favorite thing to do was to give it like really, really like understated single word names.
Yeah.
That was my favorite.
Oh, yeah. What a great game. Okay. So what's your new, so it's your future retro again then?
Well, yeah, because I think you talked about it before.
Yeah, but, it was me.
I wanted to bring it up because I had never really, I hadn't delved as deeply into the mechanics of the game as I had before, and it's surprisingly held up, and I'm pretty sure, like I said, it's been updated since I first played it years ago.
Yep.
Oh no, don't, that's it's like crack hearing that. Make it stop. Why are you playing that
so
now?
Cute.
Put it away.
I can't help it. It's your fault.
You got to talk about your game now.
I don't want to play any other game ever again.
Oh, no. But and that's how Vink stopped playing Mass Effect.
That's how Vink. So my pile of shame this month is every game that's not Game Dev Story.
Including Game Dev Story 2.
Including Game Dev Story 2. And yeah, no, it's... okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. Stupid. I should lock that out of my phone. Man.
Just delete it.
I deleted it before, but it's a really small file. You can
it comes
download
back.
And delete.
It reinstalls itself.
It reinstalls itself. Now I gotta do the 12 steps again. Okay. Anyway. So I've been on a original PlayStation kick lately.
Ah.
Because, as I said, I went, you know, when we were having our, and you should listen to that podcast again if you haven't, when Game Dave was here, and we kind of talked about our own history through the console wars, you know.
Yes.
I didn't have a Sony system until, I think I got my PlayStation 1 very shortly before I got my PlayStation 2, and I got my PlayStation 2 about 2 years before the PlayStation 3 came out, like really late in the gen.
Sure.
I picked up my PlayStation so that I could play Kudelka. I think it's called Kudelka. Kluduk? I don't know. It's the game that led to the Shadow Hearts series.
Okay.
Because it was an SNK-developed RPG. I was really big into the games they made for the Neo Geo Pocket, like Fazele. So I picked up a PlayStation 3 mainly so I could play that. But anyway, but because of that, I really didn't play many other games. I played... Final Fantasy VIII. I played some of Final Fantasy VII. You know, I really didn't dive into the system very much. And actually, I'm rediscovering right now with my Vita. They had a really good sale on, which is probably over by the time this podcast comes out. But they had a lot of games. Like, I picked up Suikoden for $1.50. I picked up Xenogears for like $3, and I think I mentioned before I was playing through Parasite Eve, on Vita and things. But anyway, I picked up a bunch of Japanese PlayStation 1 games, and I'm discovering new stuff and kind of rediscovering some stuff I used to like.
Ooh!
I'm going to talk about. You've played Parappa, right?
Yes. A little bit. I never owned it myself.
Oh, really? You're so into rhythm games. I thought that would be right up your alley.
Well, I mean, you know, I was into Samba because of Ben, and I think I played Parappa a little bit, but...
it's a fun game.
Samba ruined me for a lot of games.
It's good. Really, really, the fact that I have a CRT is really the best way to play rhythm games because if you play retro rhythm games on a new TV, the refresh rate might actually be not quite to your favor.
Okay.
But anyway, I was playing a little Parappa, which I liked, but the game I really like by that creator is, are you familiar with Vib Ribbon?
You mean Crack Rabbit? I think that's a weird way to pronounce Crack Rabbit, honestly.
Yeah, crack Rabbit. Yes. I think it actually did come out in Europe.
Okay.
I think it did. But it did not come out in the United States up until PlayStation Network pretty recently.
Right. Yeah. I heard that came out and I was like, squee!
But back 2001, I was in Japan with my good friend Ben. Who's been mentioned on the show before.
And by me, like a minute ago?
By you, like a minute ago, yes. And he bought this game because he had a play. He bought a used PlayStation while we were in Japan, and he bought this game kind of on a whim, I guess. Just looked at it. And he renamed it instantly Crack Rabbit because... the main character looks like a wireframe rabbit on crack. And
especially the worse you do.
Yes. Yeah, the worst you do. And the game is tiny. It's all wireframe graphics. Like, it's only black and white. There's no colors in this game, and it's all wireframe. It looks like it was made on an oscilloscope.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And the levels themselves are just lines. And the entire game can be loaded into the 2 megs of the PlayStation's memory, and this is important because the whole rest of the game disc is just tracks of audio. And these audio tracks are your stages. And what happens is the game is generating stages based on how the audio is set out. And the pre-made tracks on the CD are great. They progress you through easy songs to kind of hard things, and really good music too. You remember the music from this one?
I don't actually, because I seem to remember that every time we played it, it was with like some other CD.
Okay, you're getting to that. Yes, the coolest thing about this game is you can pop in another CD, whatever, and it's going to create a level. Maybe a good level, maybe an impossible level,
right?
Based off the music that you put into it, it'll generate a level, and that's why actually I don't know how it's going to work on PSN, because you can't just pop a CD in there. I don't think. Maybe it's only the pre-made.
Oh no! Yeah, it didn't even occur to me that's like a downside.
Sean, you should buy this.
I should buy it, and I should see if I can like play an MP3 at the same time.
Yes, so we should see. And otherwise, Sean, I just sent you a Christmas present. If I would have known you didn't have Vibram, and I would have sent you a copy.
Oh man, well I got some pretty cool stuff. Which, I'll do a video about that.
Yeah, do that. But Vibram, like. I don't know if the PSN version does allow you to put in your own audio somehow. I guess that's probably the version to get. But otherwise, it's not that expensive of a game. You can probably get a copy for $10-15, and you can probably get a Japanese PlayStation for $10-15. You know, well, shipping is a little. But I don't know. I think definitely a worthwhile title to pick up. That's actually why I picked up a PlayStation this time. Just to play Vibram. I've got my PlayStation 3, which will play the American PlayStation games, no problem. That I brought with me. And I've got an American PlayStation 2, but I was lacking a PlayStation 1.
Okay.
And like you can play PlayStation games in a PC emulator. A lot of them will accept a commercial disc, but won't allow me to swap out songs with, you know.
Right.
So I was having a party and I wanted to play Vibram. So long story short, I picked up an OG PlayStation 1.
Nice. Did it have the original?
Yep. Non-analog controller. Yes.
Oh no, I was thinking of the laser, because there was two models of that where one that was too close to the power supply and would warp.
Oh, well, since it still works, maybe not. Sure. I don't know. I mean, it's working. Although, like, one of the ball bearings just like popped out. Randomly, still works. I don't know what that one was doing. I think it was holding the disc in. We'll see how long this one holds out. But like, I paid $10 for it, so if it breaks, you know, I'll get another one and have a second controller. So,
oh dear.
Yeah, if anyone's looking for a cheap retro system right now, PlayStation. That's the cheap one right now. It used to be Super Famicom, but those have started going up in price.
Wow, really? Yeah, because I think I paid like 1,000 yen for the one I bought. Yep. It didn't come with anything at all, like no controllers, no power, no nothing. But
you're not going to find that anymore.
Oh, jeez.
If you go to a place like Famicom Dojo, you might be able to still get one for a cheaper price. But online, they're going for a lot more now.
Oh boy.
So yeah, everybody buy PlayStation PlayStations. No, don't.
To train your game, head over to our show notes at famicomdojo.tv/podcast for additional pictures, video, and bonus audio for this episode. Call us at 608-492-1923 to leave a voicemail for our Inchmail episodes, or send us a comment on Facebook or Twitter at Famicom Dojo. Consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes, and be sure to subscribe to Famicom Dojo on YouTube for our latest videos about retro, import gaming, and more.
And my pile of shame is growing exponentially recently, I gotta say.
Oh, no.
My brother just got me Gekiten Saiyaban versus Leiden. I want to play that. And as I said, there was that PSN sale, so I downloaded about 4 or 5 PlayStation 1 RPGs that I haven't played. And I'm like, why am I even buying these? I don't have this much life left. You know,
right?
Like, I have more games than I could possibly ever complete in a lifetime right now. So I got to figure out how to whittle down this pile of shame a bit,
or figure out how to get extra lives.
Ah, that's it. That's it. All right. So I think that's all I got on that.
All right. Okay. Well, I guess we should bring it home then.
All right.
This was actually our first show of 2016. I mean, one that we recorded in 2016. It'll be the third release. You know, I mean, second
really?
Episode, because there was a Denshi Mail in the middle. You know, this is hard to keep track. The point is,
I have no idea. Okay.
The point is, we recorded
Happy
this
New Year
on the other side of the New Year.
All right.
And to answer the question that we asked in an earlier episode, how many more times will we watch The Force Awakens before the end of the year? For me, that was 2. I watched it twice.
You watched it twice.
Yes.
I watched it within the new year, so I did not watch it in 2015 at all.
Oh, man. Well, you know, it's fast approaching the most, the highest grossing film of all time. We'll see if it gets there, though. It's got a few $100 million to make up for, but it hasn't opened in China yet. Last I heard,
really.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Well, I gotta say that in all the countries it opened in, it was the number one movie except for Japan.
Yes, I heard it was underperforming there, and I cannot figure out.
It wasn't that it was underperforming. It's just that there was another movie performing better.
Oh.
And that was. Can you guess?
I heard once, and I think I blocked it from memory.
It's going to be a movie based on the game that is going to be next episode's Future Retro.
Oh.
So there. We'll leave it there. let's see if the audience can figure it out. What game is going to be my Future Retro that... Yeah, I suppose with the internet, people could figure this out pretty easily. But anyway, try to do it without the internet, you know. Do it with one half of your brain tied behind your back. So,
or all your hands.
Yes, all your hands.
All
okay.
Right. Well, I guess it's all the time we have for this week.
Yes.
The Famicom Dojo Video Game Podcast is produced every week by That's Orange LLC. Our theme songs, Famicom Thrash and RPG, were written and performed by the Amari Tones. Find them on iTunes and at amaritones.net. Pixel art by Lewis Lloyd Judson at lewistrations.co.uk. Find us at famicomdojo.tv/podcast, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever RSS feeds are downloaded. And, of course, head over to littlepodcast.com to listen to other great shows on the Little Podcast Network. So, until next time, the dojo is...
listening to the audio tracks that you put in and creating custom levels for you.
Beautiful. It's like crack.
Except not... You know what? If only it just was crap. But you know what it is? It's game dev story. Oh, man. There might not be a podcast next week.
Famicom Dojo.